Our guests today have been guests on our podcast before. Michael spoke with her in episode 159 in New York at SY Partners headquarters. And he also spoke with her two colleagues and partners together with our co-host Max Giordano in episode 123 in Berlin. A lot has happened since then, and since the three are currently in Germany, Michael and I thought it was a good time for another episode with SY Partners. SY Partners stands for a holistic approach to consulting, which our female guest today, who works there as CEO, summarized as follows. The future that we are fighting is one bringing humanity and performance together, such that the organizations and coalitions of the future are built in a fundamentally different way. That's a quite bold approach, and you can look forward to a very interesting episode. For more than 6 years, we have been looking at how work strengthens people instead of weakening them. In more than 380 conversations, we've talked to over 450 people about what has changed for them and what needs to change further. We're quite sure that it is important right now because the idea of new work was developed during a real crisis. We are looking for methods, role models, experiences, tools, and ideas that bring us closer to the core of new work. In addition, from the very beginning, we have been concerned with the question of whether all people can really find and live what they really, really want within their innermost being. You are on the way to new work today with Jessica Orkin, Mark Winter, and Thomas Winkermann.
So I am so honored and so proud to have you together in this nice studio. So for all our listeners, we are sitting at Studio Bummens, which is the most famous podcast studio in Germany besides Podstars, our home studio. No, I'm kidding. It's really the studio of our times. And Jessica, I'm happy to have you here in my home country. When we talked last time, I think it's 3.5-4 years ago before Corona. Mark and Thomas, we kept the contact. We had some video sessions in between. I'm so happy to have you three here in Berlin. And as you were guests on our show before, I will not start the question, how did you become the person you are now? But maybe how did you become the after Corona person? Maybe we start with this. Jessica, do you like to start?
Yes. First, wonderful to be back and with you. Okay, post-corona. Perhaps let's go back into corona for a moment. And for me personally, I went from being a leader within SY Partners and also a mom of a teenager, where my previous 10, 20 years of working life was constantly being on planes, constantly shifting time zones, constantly being away from my family. It was a choice that I freely made. I love what I do. And so then have that crash into corona and crash into suddenly being 24 hours a day in one place and with my son, Lucas. One of the gigantic gifts that I will take away from that incredibly difficult time is that I had almost 3 years straight of being day in and day out with my son in those tender years between high school and then moving into university. And I will cherish those. Professionally, and Mark and Thomas can speak more about this, but I had become CEO on January 1st, 2020. I had been, the strategy for the years ahead were a gentle and graceful transition from 25 years of our founders leading the company and really thoughtfully stepping through what do we keep from the past, but also what do we gradually introduce. Then the pandemic, then everything gets ripped up, the assumptions, the strategy, the growth pathing, all of it. And then again, it was a very strange gift, because it allowed us to examine all of the assumptions that we around running the business, And two, forcing us to innovate, to declare, what do we stand for in this time? What do we stand for going forward? What is the same, but what is actually radically different? And so our business, we innovated from the inside out and in fact rebuilt the business in many ways, both for what does it take to move through the pandemic together as a community, doing work that matters, but also reposition us for the future and the growth path that we're now on. But Mark Thomas, you live this day in and day out as well.
Everything you said in the sense of the pace, and I think the gift of time, you know, time is always the thing most valuable to us and the thing we most cheaply give away. And to now be gifted back that for 3 years was quite remarkable and a nice way to reassess both in terms of life. And I'll answer your question both personal and professionally. And so personally, I think the choice to become a father is one. Second, to pursue different aspects of art that I've long wanted to pursue, to become a different type of writer, to become also a bit of a musician. And then professionally, I think to, you know, one thing that's been really amazing to experience is the flattening, I think, of geographies, which no doubt we'll get to later. But suddenly, everyone was open to have a conversation with one another. It didn't matter where you were. And wherever it is that you were beamed in, you were in someone's living room or in someone's car. And the curiosity of everyone, of how they were interpreting the moment and what they were doing in response, I think was a profound gift of knowledge for us to then start to apply and then push ourselves, our clients, and those around us to not just snap back, but actually use that gift to make new. So that's me.
It's nice to be back. Feels a little bit like home already, this podcast. One thing that consumed me in a good way and in a tender way as well during the during this pandemic was the disparity between how some people experienced it and how others did, and that circumstance and fate and these kind of things had a, you know, huge impact on everybody's story. So we all experienced one thing, but very differently. And I tried to stay aware of that during that time, very much so. And I think maybe that's also why I don't think I've ever felt as much gratitude for the way I was allowed to experience it due to my, you know, the side of things that I was on when all this happened. But for me, I think there's one theme that is prevalent throughout multiple dimensions of my life, you know, relationships, work, etc., which was it was a time of deepening. And it's resounding still. It's not over. And I think just trying to also reconnect to that deepening and understanding why that happened and why that was possible and why that matters and why it needs to carry forward in everything I do. That for me was the prevalent theme of that time. And there were many ways by which that happened. Being out in nature more, et cetera, but slowness and things like that. But the deepening was profound. And with the deepening came focus, came clarity, came, I suppose, impact as well. So it's a very special time.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your feelings and experiences. I believe when we have a look back into the time where we met first, and if someone would have told us what will happen in the years to come, we would probably all have become depressive. So luckily we're sitting here with a positive attitude. We all four believe that it's the time to work for a positive change in the companies we are working for as consultants and for society. And so, I'm happy that we in our first minutes before we started recording, we grabbed some topics where we want to talk about. But maybe because there may be some listeners which do not know SYP, SY Partners. Make a little intro about the company. So in our book, we have the story of SY Partners and their or your role in the Starbucks case, where Starbucks closed, I think it was 8,000 branches for half a day to make all these workshops. I always use this example in speeches. And I was so much fascinated when I met you two guys first and then you, Jessica, about the way you are approaching something many people would call consulting. And consulting does not have the best word. Is not the most trustful word in business, but the way you are consulting, helping, enabling, transforming companies is so special that I would love to hear something about SYP. And I think all the listeners who know you are happy to give this summary as well.
So remember the days back when you would fly into another country and you'd have to list your profession on an actual sheet of paper. So whenever that would happen, I would have to write consultant, and I would have this sense of God, that's just not what we do. So it is true, SY Partners is a consulting company, but really I think more appropriate for that line and that form would be we are designers of futures with companies, with leaders of typically businesses of different sizes, but some of the iconic brands and iconic leaders out in the world. And the through line that connects all of those leaders and all of those companies is a belief that business can and should do better, and that it can have a positive impact both on its employees, on its customers, on the communities in which it works. And that at the root, it is bringing humanity into business and recognizing the fullness of what each of us as individuals bring into the company and creating the space for that. So we do work that could look like big transformational work, big strategic work, big cultural work with organizations. But again, at the heart of that is this idea that we are designing better futures, and we're using the power and the heft and the ambitions and the aspirations of companies and the people who make them up in order to put them on a trajectory of growth. But that is really powered by creativity and humanity and imagination and really strong business performance. Mm.
Mark, you as the head of business development, well, could there be a better summary?
No, or shorter.
Sure. No, it's an excellent one. I mean, I think at the root of it, it is that belief, like that business can and should be better. And I think why we are all resistant to the consultant sort of hat is because very often we get asked questions that many leaders don't know how to answer. And it could be anything from how do we help my culture thrive and flourish in ways that look completely different that we could not yet imagine before. But very often, we often get leaders who ask us even wilder kinds of questions that feel kind of unique and that only we can help them solve. So, for example, what should the future of American education be? We're having a nation celebrating a big anniversary. It could be a 50th anniversary of a nation. It could be a 250th anniversary of a nation. Like, what do we really think is worth celebrating? And what do we really want to put forth to the next generation that's going to inherit those kind of values and behaviors, et cetera? So, you know, we have the, I think, privilege of operating and helping leaders think bigger and more expansive, but then also kind of helping them make choices about how to make some of those futures real.
Cool. Before we dive into our first topic, maybe you add some words. Maybe Thomas, you can do this to the DNA of the company, which was, I think, started in the 90s of the last century, and started by some guys who were not in the founders team, but in the early days at Apple. I found this so fascinating, and I believe it's worth telling the story again. Thomas?
Well, I think maybe I'll talk about the DNA strand, perhaps, that at least from my vantage point, and, you know, I'm a designer by trade and sort of looked after many of those parts of our organization that sort of deal with design and creativity and the realm of the senses and emotions, which are such a big part of how humans change. Naturally, it's how we're conceived. And that's actually, you know, if you think about our origins in a company like Apple, it's actually a very spiritual company in a way, because of how the founder thought about what a product is and where it comes from. The conviction that always sat at the heart of that company, that a focus group is never going to get you the answer, but it has to come from a deeper place. And the role that design plays in that company in how the product you hold in your hands is differentiated. I think these are principles and ideas that apply far beyond a tech product. And clearly what we can see now is that Apple has reinvented itself over and over again, and that DNA hasn't gone away, but the products are completely different, the ecosystems, all the rest of it, the idea. I think that's the DNA strand. I think that at least sets us apart in one distinctive way, that the way that we do the work is both originating always from a place within. It's not orientated by indicators from the outside. It's also, that plays a role, but the major on it is the journey. And then, and the other is that we feel and experience ideas. We don't just grok them, you know, we don't just process them with our logic mind, and those two things together create a very different perspective on process of transformation and change.
And if I can add just one other belief, you know, I always love this kind of provocation, especially coming out of Apple, which is a product business. But can you actually design an organization with the same intention that you could a product? That is, set purpose, vision, leadership, culture, products and services. Can we bring them all together in concert as a singular powerful force? And what might that look like out in the world? And so much of our work is actually the design, everything Thomas said, you know, getting clear on the DNA, but then actually designing, I think, the organization to bring it in concert to deliver on that through that kind of philosophy. So it's a really guiding belief of ours.
Perfect. I think we're in the game now, and it's just 15 minutes. It's easy.
Yeah.
We decided to start with a meta topic, which is called trust. Jessica, you brought this onto the table, and maybe you start with your thoughts why you believe that trust is such a universal topic right now in our days.
Yeah, and in this, I personally straddle two worlds, and so one of those worlds is one of deep optimism. And the belief that we can, in fact, intentionally design cultures, design companies, design organizations, and bring out the best in them. But the other world that I also stand in is, if you read any of the newspapers, if you speak to your neighbors, we're in a moment of incredible polarization, and particularly in the U.S., but I see this happening. I also live in Europe, and I see this happening in other places as well, where regular people are losing both the ability and in some cases interest to actually talk to one another across difference, across different belief sets, different political opinions. And in that space where we're getting further and further away from one another, where we're losing intimacy with one another, the ability to look at someone in their eyes and say, I may not agree with you, but I hear you. I'm listening. Mm-hmm. Let's go deeper. The social fabric is eroding. The trust that we have of one another, and as members of a shared society, I really fear, and the data supports this, it's weakening. And I think that's a really dangerous place for us, and one that we have to pay attention to. And that can be, again, at the level of members of a family, members of a community, all the way up through organizations and companies have to be paying attention to this, all the way through to politics and senior leaders of governments. We have to be able to recognize that we are standing in a shared reality. We may have different experiences of it, but we are in something together. And we need to trust one another enough that it can inspire coordinated action, that we can make decisions and move forward together. And I think this is going to be both further threatened, particularly with what we're seeing with the rise of generative AI. I think there's good stuff that can come out of that as well. So this is not an anti-AI statement. But I think what it's going to do in terms of further isolating people into and creating different realities that people are standing in, I have real concerns. I think this is going to be one of the issues that all of us need to be addressing to really do repair and healing.
And you see this on all levels, huh? On the neighborhood level, on the working level, in a team, in a group, in a company, in a country, in a society. So it's not just on one level. The lack of trust is an issue on all
levels.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just taking it to a company perspective just for a moment, it used to be in the past that if company leadership said, we are doing this, people might disagree, but there was a sense of, great, okay, we are doing this. Or we are doing this for these reasons. People say, okay, again, might disagree, but the general, okay. And now I think there is, even within organizations, there is often an ingoing stance of asking pretty critical questions, which are good. Everybody should ask questions. But sometimes beginning from a stance of, I don't trust. I'm not so sure about this. I don't know. And so we need to, again, and there's a lot that companies can do and organizations can do to rebuild this trust. And it's a lot about closing the gap between the say-do equation.
Mm. Yeah. To build on that, you know, it's one of the implications you see of, like, of the crumbling of trust is that, you know, people are increasingly turning to their place of work for camaraderie, for like-minded shared values and interests, et cetera. And they're pushing leaders into much different type of territory where they suddenly have to take points of view that they would never have taken before in order to recapture and rebuild that trust. And a large part of our work is navigating that tension. And I can see, you know, there's a lot of debate happening in the US right now. And I'm curious to see if it's happening here, is how political should an organization actually be? To what, where does the limit edge be? Where's the edge in terms of what we stand up for, what we show up for? And are we willing to accept the consequences of that in such a polarized kind of customer base, you know, where you can easily turn off or lose 30% of your customers because you're standing up for something versus not? And what's the right path forward? And it's such an interesting time. And I really think that the modern organization is actually being remade. And will continue to be so as we think about how it can have much more of a conscience as it shows up in the world.
Gleich geht's weiter mit On the Way to New Work und hier kommt die Werbung. Unser Werbepartner heute ist Headgate. Headgate ist ein Unternehmen, das von Tim Oldiges gegründet war. Warum erzähle ich euch das? Tim war selbst Manager eines über 2000 mitarbeitenden Logistikunternehmens und hat aus seinem eigenen Problem heraus Headgate gegründet. Er war damals mit anderen Personalberatern unzufrieden. Und die Frage war, wie kann man in einem Markt mit so vielen Beratern Pionierarbeit im Recruiting leisten? Was Headgate macht? Headgate fokussiert sich auf Führungskräfte für deutsche Familienunternehmen. Das heißt, die über 2000 Projekte, die sie für DAX-Konzerne und den Mittelstand durchgeführt haben, sind genau dazu da, um die Top-3 Führungsebenen zu besetzen, also eine präzise Besetzung mit extrem hohen Kandidatenzahlen. Die Kombination aus bewährten Vertriebsstrategien, wie zum Beispiel aber auch dann mit sehr innovativen Ansätzen. Ich gebe euch mal ein Beispiel und das fand ich extrem cool. Den Recruiting-Prozess neu gedacht, wie mit Landingpages und Videocontent, um diese Position zu besetzen. So, das ist mal ganz anders als das Ganze sonst zu machen. Das heißt, man hat viel anfassbarere, in Anführungszeichen, KandidatInnen, um genau diese Nähe zwischen Kunden und KandidatInnen herzustellen. Hier ist ein schönes Zitat von dem Team von Headgate. Die bekommen eben dann nicht nur Fanpost von ihren Kundinnen und Kunden und Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten, sondern sie nennen das Liebesbriefe, die sie dann bekommen. Und diese Liebesbriefe, die steigern natürlich, die dann auch geteilt werden, die Rückmeldequoten um bis zu 35%. Das ist schon sehr hoch, genau in diesen Positionen. Und damit gibt es dann eben nicht nur diese erstklassige Candidate Experience, sondern der Recruiting-Prozess, der richtet quasi alle Scheinwerfer auf den Kunden aus und eliminiert dieses ganze oberflächliche Recruiting-Blabla. Das ist schon sehr cool. Ich würde sagen, es lohnt sich auf jeden Fall mal reinzuschauen und eine Idee von diesem 5-Sterne-Service, der 24-monatigen Garantie auf jede Besetzung und der weniger als 2% Garantieansprüche zu bekommen. Ein tieferes Verständnis für die Unternehmenskultur gibt es kaum als eben das, was HeadGet euch möglich macht, und das unterscheidet sie von über 90% der anderen PersonalberaterInnen da draußen. Also, wenn ihr sagt, das möchte ich mir mal anschauen, dann geht ihr auf head-gate.de/newwork und gebt den Code ein, newwork36. Damit verlängert ihr nämlich die Garantie auf 36 Monate bei Beauftragung. Und das Ganze gilt bis zum 30.06.2024. Das war's mit der Werbung. Also auf head-gate.de/newwork und jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Rest von On the Way to New Work.
But how could this happen? I mean, research shows since years that trust is such a strong factor of working together, whether it's Patrick Lencioni with his 5 dysfunctionalities of a team, which starts with a lack of trust, or Amy Edmondson, we had her on our show with the concept of psychological safetiness. The research is so crystal clear. But we see, for me, this lack of trust is one indicator why people are buying weapons in your country, and why people in our country start to ask for, why can't we buy weapons? Because you don't trust each other anymore. How could this happen? Is there a single thing where you believe it started to decline, or what is it? Is it the complexity of our world? What is the reason for the lack of trust?
Well, there are people who have done a lot of research on this, so we are not the trust experts. But the way, how I'm seeing this presented is I think there has been an erosion of what is, frankly, civic discourse. What are the ways in which we can engage with one another through the news, through public debate, through conversations at community levels? There had been a level of civility, a level of recognizing each other's common humanity, even when we don't agree with one another. And I think that we're seeing that really challenged. Lots of reasons why. You see what's happening within the political sphere in the U.S. You see the effect of social media. So the ability to, in one tweet, raise a base of people and amplify a particular idea. On both sides of the spectrum, there's no party that has the kind of the cornered the market on this, shall we say. You see it actually also in our universities, and just came out of a number of conversations with university leaders, and they're very concerned about what's happening in the classrooms. The ability to have constructive debate within even classrooms in our highest educational systems, people are getting scared to bring ideas forward that may go against the prevailing wisdom of the room. And I do think that our pandemic time has created smaller and smaller worlds for each of us, because, again, through social media, through not having as much face-to-face time, and I am a strong proponent of hybrid work, of being able to work in different places in different ways. I see lots of good things coming out of it, but I think we've gotten a little further away from one another.
One thought, I mean, like Jessica said, we're definitely not trust experts. An observation. So, you know, when one talks about the waning of something, then there's a question of what's changed. And when you think about it, I think what's changed and what's unique and what's different and what never was before, and not everybody might be fully cognizant of that yet, is that we, for the first time, face a paradigm of limits. They were always there, but they are now perceived and they're now manifesting as a reality. And in the context of those limits, trust plays a big role, because 15 or 20 years ago, a company could own up to being a extractive, profit-making growth-based system. And people were, that was part of how we do business. And so there were other factors. But now a company plays a very different role because it plays a role of being a still extractive entity in a world of undeniable limits. So the path to becoming a contributing entity in a world of limits that is replenishing versus destructive is suddenly a reality which where a company has to own up to the conversation. And now you have a generation of people. And this is only one small dimension of the trust conversation that I feel a little bit more clear about in my mind is that, you know, trust, I mean, I suppose one of the core constituents of a trusting relationship is purity of intent. Like, I am who, what I say, I do what I believe, this is who I am, and then there is trust, whether you agree or not, to Jessica's point about, well, we should be able to disagree, to agree on difference. When a company is doing one thing because that's how it's conceived, but something major has changed in the world, the conversation becomes one of, well, what are you going to do to now be a different thing that I can trust? So it's one dimension, but I find that one quite interesting because it is that's different in our time. We've had wars, we've had a lot of things, but this is the thing that marks our time now, is that suddenly we're up against something. And before that, there was no perceived sense of limit. And that's a huge difference.
In Germany, we tend to bring this down to a fight between generations. So right now, I'm the last boomer in Germany. Germany, I think 64 is the year where boomer ends, and I'm December 64. And boomers and the Generation Z, they are confronted right now. So the boomers said, well, the Gen Z, they don't work, they just want work-life balance, and they're crazy. And the Gen Z says, well, the boomers are destroying our planet and so on. Research shows that the differences within the generations are much bigger than between generations. Is this generation topic something in the US, what you see as well? So we have now the last generation. They are very aggressive in terms of their weapons. They put themselves with glue on streets and do things like this. They are painting private planes and on the island of Sylt, they spray against houses and stuff like this. What can you see in your country? Is there a generation conflict?
So this is one of the hottest topics with the CEOs and leadership teams that we work with. And they are a bit bewildered for the reasons that you just laid out. I personally think that this next generation, this rising generation, I think they're going to be a force for so much change. And in my perspective, really good change. Mm-hmm. They are still learning the skills of engagement. They're still learning the skills of dialogue. They're still learning the skills of leadership. All of these things, they're still building. They're young, but they're bringing to it creativity, imagination, a willingness to really question the status quo, which needs to be questioned, right? And so if you were to roll back probably right before the pandemic, I think leadership started in companies started to say, okay, we have this rising generation. They work differently. They have different expectations. And some, I think, saw it as a problem. What I'm now seeing is that conversation, at least in the US, is starting to shift. And it's starting to say, okay, there's this gigantic source of energy and ideas. And so how can we better engage? How can we better create bridges across the generations? And you're looking at things like very intentionally curated intergenerational teams. Mm-hmm. You're looking at mentorship and reverse mentorship. You're looking at big established companies actually incubating groups that are created by much younger people, right? So I think where it's going to be fascinating is actually the mashup of what's great across these generations and the inspiration that that folks are bringing with their questions and with their desire to act, which is, I think, what this era needs so greatly.
Yeah, I see it as everything you said, but it feels like a much more of an activist generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some shadow sides to that, of course. I mean, very often, I think dialogue, I like what you said, they're learning to engage, I think, because actually dialogue very often has been, you know, we have had cancel culture, we've had woke, whatever that means right now. It's but what they're pushing for, I think, like fundamentally, is a radically different paradigm of a way of working, of a way engaging, and a way of running both kind of businesses. And that to me is incredibly exciting. And I think like part of what we've seen, I think, is we see CEOs and leaders kind of sit in two camps. You know, those that are openly embracing the yes, let's go, let's put our generations together. There's so much we can learn, and the quicker we adapt, the better. And then we see others, which were, my God, it's just so radically different because it's a fundamentally untangling of everything they've learned about what it means to run a business and how to engage employees. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. So when we were talking about our topics for this session, we talked about leadership and the bridge between trust and leadership. For me, it was built by Stephen M.R. Covey, who was guest on our show, when he told us that he believes that leadership will have to reinvent itself from a state of mind, which was command and control, to a new area where leadership is about trust and inspire. So we talked about leadership before. I think leadership is a critical weapon to get trust back onto the table and to build these kind of bridges. And I would love to hear a little bit about leadership, how leadership changes in the US. So I can see it in Germany a little bit, but for me, the progress is not fast enough. But what can you see? I mean, we have some examples like Satya Nadella, who he's seen as a new leader. Maybe you can give us some examples and your thoughts on leadership and how it will change and will have to change.
So a leader that we really admire and have worked closely with is Brian Chesky at Airbnb. And I think one of the things that Brian is bringing to the table is vision, which all leaders should have, but vision within the recognition that the operating environment is moving so fast, so quickly. And so he has the audacity and bravery. He's, you know, created an entire new category within the market, an entirely new way for people to move around the planet and be with one another. And he has been able to move very quickly. And the way that he navigated and Airbnb navigated the pandemic and then come out even stronger. And he moved through that with humanity, with vulnerability, with acknowledging what he did know, what he did not know. At one point, they had to let go of about a quarter of their workforce. And we were side by side through a lot of that. And people who actually were exiting Airbnb came out with such a positive opinion of this company that they were leaving because the way in which Brian both communicated the decision, the need for it, and then every step of support for people who were leaving. So where that could have been a reputation breaker, a trust breaker. In fact, Airbnb came out stronger on the other side because of the way in which they navigated it. That to me is the leadership of the future. That is what is needed as we go forward. That blend of incredible business savvy, creativity, and then humanity, empathy, and agility.
Yeah, they were so much involved in the Ukraine, in solving the problems of Ukraine refugees all over the world. We had Katrin Anselm. She's the general manager of the German area at Airbnb, and she was telling us the story from inside. And yeah, I think it's a very good example.
Yeah, you know, I think what's the core idea of Airbnb? Really, you know, I think Brian would say, and others would say, you know, it's around this idea of belonging, right? And if we make decisions around that and open up our homes to for refugees, for Ukraine, for...
It's purpose-driven, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely purpose-driven. And it's also, in some cases, it's also political as well. You know, I think he's also made choices about, or the group has, in terms of shutting down homes for extreme right-wing When protests are held in towns that are highly controversial. I mean, they're very pay really, really close attention because it's against their ethos. And it's also very much, I think, also a collective act, right? Leadership. I think so much is being asked of CEOs in this moment to have a point of view, to run a business effectively, to make core decisions about who you are, to have a point of view around even emerging technology like generative AI that you brought up. It's, you know, it's such a radically different role than it was 10, 20 years ago. And I think leadership right now has to be far more run as a collective and a distributed model. And I think that's actually what you've been trying to do inside our own firm.
Yeah. And for that to work, and we know this because we're building it every day and learning what works and then what doesn't. A company has to be so clear on what it is, what it stands for, the values that animate it. And again, you could say, okay, that's always been true. But it's even more true in a world in which it is not command and control, where there's not one person or 10 people who are dictating the terms of decisions and what happens within the organization. Decisions and the ability to act have been moved out further and further in organizations, which creates agility, the ability to move and respond to all of the uncertainty that we are all facing. But it has to be guided. And so that's where we see the laddering of from purpose and vision to strategy, to beliefs, to behaviors. Mm. That's when you start to get a resilient organization that can work in coordinated ways in a direction that the company wants to move.
In Germany, we see so many companies where the purpose, vision, mission ends up as a wall tattoo in their conference room or as a mouse pad. And they miss the chance to really develop leadership principles out of these papers and they miss the opportunities to bring them to life. What is your advice or what is your tool to help people to end up not with a wall tattoo, but with a real changed or a system in a change? What can one do to avoid these things that we see so many times?
The first thing is to recognize that getting the language, getting the intent is truly but one step of a much larger process. And I think a bunch of people go in and say, okay, we need the purpose statement, check, we need the check, right? No, that is just the first step. And so actually planning for that, it's akin to rewiring an organization. And so how do you take that purpose? How do you take the beliefs, the values? How do you use that to then generate strategy? Your strategy has to be aligned with that. They cannot be two separate things. And then how do you start pulling that through to everyday rituals, everyday policies, everyday where how and where employees experience a company day in and day out, how and where customers experience a company day in and day out. And so experience and dedicating the time to creating new experiences that embody that purpose, that's when things come to life. But it requires tools. It requires designing new systems. It requires training people, inviting them into these new ways of being. Thomas has done a lot of work in this space, bridging that gap.
Yeah, I think maybe something to add to the conversation that could be quite interesting is that it goes back to my earlier point about how the world has shifted and the landscape in which business operates. Like, it's become permeable in a way that it wasn't. If you go 30 years back, let's say, it was still possible to entertain a idea that, you know, you could have a business fully aligned around an idea that was separate from what's going on in the world and be very successful. But of course, everything has changed. The world landscape has changed. The jurisdiction, the regulatory landscape has changed. The consumer has changed and all of those things. So suddenly, a company's idea and a company's culture and your own choice to be an employee in that company are entwined with what is happening in the outside world. I'm not saying it was not like that at all, but now a company is like vulnerable. It's out in the open. It is a political entity more than it ever was. As an employee, you're now subscribing to an idea that either aligns with perhaps an ethical standard or a moment in the world or not. Whereas I think there was a time when companies could be ecosystems of their own within which you can find belief and passion, but now everything is connected and permeable. And therefore, you know, the something like a purpose, like a core idea or a kind of a sense of intent, suddenly has to work much harder and sit in a very different dialogue with essentially every single person that is complicit in executing on it, right? Like, and as we just said before, there is now a generation of people asking that question. It's like, do I want to be part of this? You know, is this fair? Is this ethical? Does this align with myself, but also what's happening in the world? And I think that's what is making this work more important and more difficult than perhaps where it was before.
Is it a big portion of your work? Yeah, it is.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, so this is a huge part of our work. And I was just speaking at the Aspen Ideas Festival with the CEO of Ralph Lauren, of Prudential and of Danone North America. And the conversation that we were having was one of purpose. And actually, both, does it still matter today, given that so much of the operating environment is shifting? Unsurprisingly, because we're all purpose-driven leaders, the answer was yes. But the big topic was, the difficult part of this is not so much the landing of the language and of the intent, although that is work too. It is the operationalization of it. And SYP spends a lot of time with our clients on that pull through, bringing it all the way through. I have, this may not make as much sense for a global audience, but I have this idea of companies as actually tables within a school cafeteria. And so think about any American movie about American high school. And so in the cafeteria, you have the different tables. And over in one corner, you have the jocks, the people who play sports. And another table, you have the science kids who are really into science. And then at another, you have the alternative kids. And they're all wearing like black and, you know, right? Okay, so each table has a different different group of people. Companies are a little bit like that. They do not need to be everything for everybody, nor should they be. And so a company has not only the right, but the mandate to declare loudly, this is what we stand for. This is what we care about. And there are some things that you, employee, may really also care about, but they're actually not central to this company and to this business. And then people, employees, have the right to vote with their feet and go sit at another table within the cafeteria. And I think that's one of the real strengths of the work that we all do with leaders, with companies, is to help them get clearer and clearer about what they are and what they're not. And they will attract the people who want to be part of that company or sit at that table.
Werbung. Dein Cloud-Account wurde deaktiviert. Bitte neu anmelden. So oder so ähnlich könnte eine Mail bei dir im Postfach heißen, aber hinter der Webseite, hinter dem Formular steckt kein Tool, sondern ein Phishing-Angriff. Betrüger kommen so an die sensiblen Daten deiner Company und unser Partner SoSafe hilft dir dabei, um das menschliche Sicherheitsrisiko bei Cyberattacken zu minimieren. In den letzten 3 Jahren hat nämlich jedes zweite Unternehmen einen erfolgreichen Cyberangriff erlebt und Firmen investieren zwar Zeit und Ressourcen in Firewall und Technik, aber 85% aller Datenschutzvorfälle sind tatsächlich auf den Faktor Mensch zurückzuführen. Und SoSafe hilft durch verhaltenswissenschaftlich fundierten E-Learning, Gamification, intelligenten Angriffssimulationen, Risikoanalysen und Auswertungen dabei, eine Human Firewall in deinem Unternehmen aufzubauen. Wenn ihr es testen wollt, auf sosafe.de/omr könnt ihr euch kostenlos für eine eigene, individualisierte Phishing-Simulation anmelden. Also einfach mal testen, wie eure Klickrate im Unternehmen wäre auf solche Mails. Bisherige Unternehmen hatten da zum Beispiel 30%. Ihr könnt gucken, ob euer Unternehmen über- oder unterbietet. Alle Infos auf sosafe.de/omr. Werbung Ende.
We have a very good example which fits your story, which is Unilever. Unilever has a very strong purpose for the whole group. They forced all their brands to develop a purpose and brands where there was no chance to create a sensible purpose, that they sold them or whatever. And then they gave their employees the chance to attend to a personal purpose workshops. What then happened is that some of them said, well, maybe Unilever is not longer the right company for me. And they said, well, better now than in 4 years when you're frustrated or depressed. And when anything, something changes, you know where we are. And there were a lot of rehires, people leaving the company and said, well, maybe Unilever was not so bad. And I think it's a very nice picture you just created. I had two examples on my podcast journey, which I always use as examples. The good example is the Starbucks story. Even if it was a sad moment in the history of Starbucks, but the way you really had a look into the mission statement and said, well, that's not us. But we have to change it. And you really did it with a big step into the right direction and everything what followed then. And the other example was Refinery 29, a media company in New York. They had one of the strongest purposes I've ever had, to let women see, feel, and claim their power. But they did not live to it. And they were not in the position to, when they had their not so good moment to do the right things, because it was so much in the DNA and that they did not live to their purpose.
Live up to their purpose, yeah, and power. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I speak to hundreds of C-level executives, you know, a year, and the number one organization everyone always points to, like, if you could be like any organization that's, you know, purpose driven, what do you think they say?
In the
world, yeah.
Oh, in the world?
Or in the U.S. It's probably the similar.
The number one purpose-driven organization. Golden State Warriors.
I know many people who would agree with you.
strength and numbers.
Strength and numbers. Patagonia was my
Patagonia,
answer.
Yeah,
everyone says that, right? Yeah, et cetera. I'm like, oh my God, they're just so far ahead. And I think, you know, Jessica's point, like, it's like, you don't have to be Patagonia, you know, you can take some lessons from Patagonia in terms of what they do. And, you know, I come back to, like, how do you avoid the well tattoo? By the way, I'm going to steal that. I like that phrase. You know, you have to show what you mean when you put out a statement like that, you know? And so, like, we often advise our CEOs and leaders, where Thomas and I are in the middle of this right now, you know, it's one thing to declare what you're here, why you're here. It's another thing to show them. And so marrying kind of the declaration with some bold moves, you know, that say, because we believe in this and this is why we're here, we're doing this. Yeah. And you kind of model it for the firm in one kind of big movement. So it's not just a declaration here and you just go away, but you're actually showing what it looks like in action is one of the things that we're actually guiding leaders to do.
Yep. One of the strongest examples in the last 5 years for me was Nike, the campaign with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah,
this was
exactly
awesome. And you could see this year, or I think it was this year, how not to do it was Bud Light. We were sorry that we did this ad. No, stick to it. Do it and then stick to it. And live with it that some people don't buy your product anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's a good thing that Kid Rock isn't buying the product.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's finish this session with the reason why are you in Berlin, the three of you. What brought you to this beautiful and interesting city?
Well, I'm happy to start, and Thomas, you should. So, you know, it's been a really interesting journey. I think, you know, we've met 4 years ago, and I think we were invited first to come to Berlin to share a bit of our work, share a little bit of how we think. That feels, I think at that time, felt a little bit different. I think right now, I think a lot of, which has been heartening to see, a lot of the world has caught up, and has, I think we see them as co-collaborators in terms of making change in the business, that making change, I think, in business and in leadership that we hungered and aspired to do. But this time, I think we've been actually doing a lot of work, both in Germany and across Europe, and we've learned so much. And I think, you know, it's just not a, I see it so much as a two-way dialogue. It's not just us bringing, you know, our work with a lot of great U.S. leaders, but also we're learning so much and from the different kind of perspective what it means to lead here in Europe. And so what we're hoping to do both tonight in terms of the gathering, but also just more in general, is kind of build stronger bridges between leadership, help us understand what a better modern way of designing businesses for the future could look like. Because there's so much that we've learned from what it means to lead in here, both from a sustainability point of view, from a humanity point of view, from a future of work point of view, that we're bringing into our practice. And we'd like to bring some of that, what we're learning in the U.S., back over here. So that's part of the reason why we're here. Thomas?
Yeah, I want to belabor Jessica's metaphor for a minute, which is, you know, even when we speak now about, you know, which one is the company that most embodies this or best demonstrates this. The interesting thing about that school, right, is that it's only when the goths and the jocks work together that the school continues. Otherwise, you have gang wars and it's over, right? And I think, and also I think maybe that was possible. I'm back to my old thing, right? Like 30 years ago, it was possible to have everybody winning and competing. And but now you have a school that will only it will live and die by whether the goths and the emos and the whatever else, you know, get along with each other and collaborate while staying authentic and clear about who they are. And I think at a very meta level, the reason I'm here is because I've always, as a German myself, found it fascinating to interrogate and walk between totally different interpretations of progress. And of course, we all talk about progress. Every company, every politician uses progress as a sort of, there's a definitional question there. If you go to America, there's plenty of progress going on. It manifests differently, and there is always a dark side to the bright side. And then you come here, and it's almost not inverse, it's not a binary, but it is incredible how we're able to illuminate the different facets of what progress is. And back to the school metaphor, I think now is the time for a business culture like the American one to work deeply in tandem with a business culture like the German one. That is not happening yet in a way. Of course, there's politics and all the rest of it that make that difficult, but it's the only way we're going to fix all the damage that we've done is by working together. So,
something that actually came out of our work with a European insurance company, we were working with them on a 5-year strategy cycle and really helping them think even bigger and bolder about the impact that they could make and then pull that through all the aspects of the business. But coming out of that, actually, the CEO approached us and said, in addition to this kind of strategic work, we're seeing one of the biggest benefits of working with SY Partners is actually a very different approach to leadership. And through our work with you, we're seeing that. We're starting to bring some of that into our own leadership culture, which I would say was built very much on a more hierarchical approach. And so the CEO said, would you ever consider actually creating a leadership program for European leaders? And so we co-created it last year. And this year is the inaugural year. It's the Emergent Leadership Program. And it is for European leaders who are not yet necessarily C-suite, but they're on that track. And they are handpicked by the CEOs and leadership of their companies to then come over. And they come over to the U.S. and we curate experiences for them. Immersive experiences that are both connected to business, but also adjacent to it. Because many of these people they've already done the different business school programs and the exec ed, so they have their deep skills. But what this is a different approach to leadership. And it is one that is much more human, much more collaborative, which recognizes the value of having experiences together that actually get you to think differently, to imagine differently, to communicate differently. And to Mark's point, it is very much a two-way street. So the leaders that have been coming over and spending time with us, they are saying it is profoundly changing Their approach to leadership, but in some cases, one of our wonderful folks said, actually, I've come back and I've had very different conversations with my wife since being part of this. But on the flip side, I have been changed by this program. Mm. I have been changed by seeing and working with these European leaders. Mm. And so I do think it is this working together across difference and learning to see with bigger eyes almost. That's where things get really interesting.
Amazing. So the last question I have for the three of you is, the first question typically is, how did you become the person you are right now? So I didn't know this before. But the new question is, where do you want to go? So where do you want to put your energy in future? What can we see from you?
I'll end where I began. You know, I think it's I am dead set on not losing sight of the act of deepening. You know, and someone at a conference that I was in like 2 years ago talked about this idea of cosmic humility, which really resonated with me because it's about, and this is not just me personally. It's actually sort of a big part of effectiveness, I suppose, at a leadership level anywhere, or also clarity around, you know, what is a company, what is it not, what is it doing, what is it not, what does it believe, what doesn't it, which is in this big world where we're all a tiny little speck of dust, what's the little humble contribution based on our strengths that we're able to make, and then together, you know, that's a much better place than everybody carrying the burden of changing the world on their backs and doing very little about it and burning out. So I think for me, the deepening piece, you know, I think it expands well beyond the individual. That's where I'm going.
Nice.
It's hard to follow a speck of cosmic dust, but I'm deeply, and part of the reason why I'm here, like I think I'm deeply fascinated and enthused and energized by co-creating across the ocean. And I think like we have so much to learn from one another. And I think the answer for what's next isn't going to come from one region. I think it's going to come from different mindsets, different skill sets coming together. So I'm really hungering to make net new in through that collaborative way.
Thank you. Jessica.
Yeah, I think you have a table of builders and creators here. So I echo, again, in this straddling of worlds, on the one hand, there's so much that has to be fixed right now, and there's so much that's not quite working out in the world. And on the other hand, I'm so deeply optimistic. I see the summoning of imagination and creativity, and again, a questioning of the status quo. And I'm seeing leaders, not all, but some leaders being really open to rethinking and to building forward in new ways. And so to be able to be part of that and to both be a guide through that time, but also be a fellow traveler as we create these new futures. And I absolutely agree. It is not going to come from one industry. It is not going to come from one country. It is not going to come from one culture. It is actually about bringing these into dialogue with one another, and then we can see what we can create.
Perfect. I believe that all our fellow travelers on our podcast show called On the Way to New Work are very happy that they met the three of you again. And I'm so thankful and so happy that we reconnected. And let's work on this transatlantical co-working, co-reskilling and healing the planet, whatever it will take us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As you've heard, I was not part of the episode, but as I mentioned earlier, I really had a good time with the existing episodes already of SY Partners, and I took away a lot from this episode, especially the perspective on business and how we should do business better is something that really inspires me and helps me refreshing the significance that businesses need to create when we talk about the balance between humanity and performance, which is a very thin line to balance. It's not easy. And this is what I loved about the episode, because we navigated here through so many different transformative experiences, especially during the pandemic and the challenging opportunities that it presented and so on. But It also showed very hands-on thoughts on how you actually can fight for this new future. And something I took away is that when they emphasized the importance of a creating and shared reality, that the power of an activist generation like Gen Z and actually the need for leadership goes together. It needs to be something beyond command and control, like to, as they call it, trust and inspire. And this is not an easy way and an easy road to go. And I cannot stress this enough. These episodes are so important when it comes to the future of work, or as we call it in Germany, the new work, or as Michael and I call it, and you guys follow for a long time, the on the way to new work. So thank you for this episode.